Hello, everyone, and welcome in to episode 3 of That SEC Podcast. I am Cody McClure, joined by Michael Bratton, as always, my good friend, SEC Mike, coming at you here for a half hour or so. Whatever you may be doing, taking the dog out for a walk or on your lunch break, whatever you're doing, you got us for a half hour here. So thanks to everybody for tuning in to today's podcast. Today we are going to talk about some all-SEC teams. The coaches team has been released. Mike, you've got some information on that, right?
Yeah. You know, a couple things definitely stood out to me as soon as I saw this list. One thing in particular that just caught my eye is Tennessee only has 4 players on this list. And that's particularly noteworthy because this is not just a first team list, but a first, second, and a third team list. And 2 of the players from Tennessee, one of them is Evan Berry. He's listed as a kick returner here. And the other player is the punter, Trevor Daniels. So Tennessee's only got 2 players outside of special teams on this list. That's kind of jarring to me. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, we've kind of had Tennessee, I think, in that same conversation as Florida and Georgia as far as talent-wise still being able to compete in the East. But maybe we're kind of overlooking just the talent disparity there. I mean, I think that the Vols have got some depth, and personally, I think they're going to have more depth on defense this year. But I don't know that they have that many stars. They don't have a lot of star power on offense or defense, and I think that's probably reflected by those coaches, all SEC teams.
Yeah, and just for a little perspective on the 2 teams you hit on, Florida and Georgia. Florida has 13 players on this list, and Georgia has 8. So they both dwarf Tennessee, but you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Tennessee is talent devoid. It's kind of like you said, this is just basically a list of the most noteworthy players coming back to into this season. But Alabama leads the list with 15. Auburn has 9. LSU has 7. And this one really surprised me, but Kentucky's got 6. South Carolina's got 5. Missouri's got 4. And at the bottom, we got Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, each with 2. So it's kind of a wide-ranging list there.
And just to kind of talk about how good Alabama is and how much talent Alabama has, not that that's some kind of a secret or anything, but out of those 15 players you mentioned, 9 of those guys are on the first team. And I'm just looking over this defense here, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Mike, just to, I don't know, to kind of change the subject for a second. But, you know, this narrative has been going around all offseason about how Alabama has lost so many players on defense. And I look at this defense, and maybe you disagree with me or maybe you know more about it, but I look at this Alabama defense, and I think it's just absolutely stacked. I mean, they've got an NFL player at every level.
Yeah,
especially, I mean, you look at that D-line, though. I mean, start there. Deshaun Hand and Deron Payne, both on the first team. And in the secondary, I mean, we've got Ronnie Harrison and Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, I'm just not sure at this point what more people want from an Alabama defense, you know?
Right. I mean, those are not only the most outstanding defensive players in the SEC, but some of them you could argue are the most outstanding defensive players in the nation. And Deshaun Hand, when he came in, he was a number 1 overall recruit. I mean, they're just loaded upon loaded. The guys behind these guys are probably just as good. I mean, they're just simply in, you know, they don't rebuild, they reload down there. And that's a cheesy saying, but it's true right now.
Yeah, linebacker Rashawn Evans, too. He's a second teamer. So, and then on the third team, you got Sean Dion Hamilton at linebacker. And both of those guys, I think, have NFL potential. So, I think this Alabama team's stacked. But is there anything else that you see on the coaches' all SEC teams that would shock you or surprise you in any way?
Nothing really. I mean, I think these lists by the end of the year are going to be completely different, and I think it's just the nature of, you know, who's returning and who are the named players. But you know, take this with a grain of salt, but it was just really jarring to me that a lot of people assume that Tennessee is in the mix for the SEC East. And according to this list, I mean, the talent disparity is pretty large between them and Florida and Georgia.
One thing I would kind of disagree with here is it running back. I noticed Nick Chubb is a first teamer. And I think that honestly is coming a little bit more about just the name and the potential that we've seen from him in his career. But you look at the production last year, Cameron Petway from Auburn, I think he should be a first-teamer.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's a lot of Nick Chubb living up on his previous reputation. I mean, he was outstanding as a freshman. He got off to an excellent start as a sophomore and obviously got hurt. He's not been to that same caliber yet, and you know, there's a lot of expectations that he'll just be fine. And I tend to think that running backs, that's just never the case. Once they suffer a serious injury, you know, outside of maybe like an Adrian Peterson, they're just never quite the same. And I would lean toward a guy that has not had a serious injury as opposed to Nick Chubb getting back to that level.
I would tend to agree. I hope we can see Nick Chubb at the level he was once at, because he's obviously a phenomenal player. But I think I got to go with Petway there for now. But
One thing before we transition off this, I just thought was interesting. I think it's funny that Austin Allen, the guy that I think is the best quarterback, is third team on this list. And even more kind of bizarre, Ralph Webb is the third team running back, and if he has an outstanding season, he's going to leave as the SEC's all-time leading rusher. And it just kind of goes to show the lack of respect that people have given him his whole career.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, I feel like I've been writing articles for 3 years now, and they've all kind of had the same theme, and that is that Ralph Webb is the SEC's best-kept secret. And I remember writing articles like that 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm thinking, I mean, this guy has, what more does he have to prove, you know? I mean, he's a fantastic running back.
I mean, the only thing he could have done is, you know, graduate, take care of the graduate transfer rule, maybe play for Alabama. Then people would know who he was.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's about all he could do. So, Mike, another thing we're going to talk about in episode 3 here is some Vegas odds, which is always always a fun thing for me. I like to bet on games occasionally. I don't know about you, but I like to, you know, I try not to do too much because, you know, you can get in trouble with that. But I like to wager a bit here and there. So anytime I see some Vegas odds, it's always fascinating to me to talk about that. And you sent me a whole bunch of them earlier.
Yeah, and I, like you, I've been a gambler for quite a while. I mean, I was giving money to my uncles when I was a kid to go gamble for me. And the lessons I learned early on was just early in the season, particularly in college, there's a lot of opportunities to grab these lines because the odd makers, I don't think they have a full grasp of a lot of these college teams, and there's definitely value in the lines that are out now, and that's something that I was eager to talk to you about.
Yeah, I think so too. So you want to get started with these Heisman numbers?
Sure.
All right. Well, just kind of looking over the Heisman odds right now, at least in talking about SEC players, Jarrett Stidham from Auburn, coming in with the best odds to win the Heisman Trophy out of the SEC at 15-1. I can't get behind that. We talked about this in the second episode of the podcast we did. He's going to be the kind of guy who comes in to run an offense that is centered around running the ball. He's not going to come in and throw for 4,000 yards at Auburn. And you know, I know he's got some ability with his legs and what have you, but I just can't see him as the Heisman front runner out of this conference.
No, that's just a bit of the offseason hype, getting a, you know, people probably throwing down money on him just because he's a big name, he's a big transfer. Auburn's, there's a lot of expectations with that team. People look at his stats. His stats were pretty outstanding at Baylor. That was essentially, I think he only played in 5 games. I think he might have made 3 starts. But only one or two of those was against a quality opponent. And I really think that the Baylor offense skews stats. So I think you kind of have to throw out the stats completely when you're talking about a player like that. I just don't think that Auburn is going to rely on him to win all these games. If they do, I think that's going to set them up for a terrible season. You know, like you said, it's going to be built on running and playing defense. They have outstanding special teams. They're just not going to rely on this guy to win all these games by throwing all these yards. Now, on the flip side of that, if Auburn really does have a good year, and maybe they go undefeated or only lose one game, a lot of times the best player on the best team gets the nod to make it to New York for that ceremony. That's the only scenario where I could see he could make it. But from that team, I would take Cam Petway at 30-1 well before I take Jared Stidham at 15-1.
And Petway, on that list, he has the sixth best odds, because you look behind Stidham and it's Jalen Hurts at 20-1, Darius Geis at 25-1, Bo Scarborough at 30-1. And I'm cool with those guys because they both had a great production last year. And obviously part of what goes into those odds is team success. And so, you know, if Alabama has another run like they did last year, it could very well end up being Hurts or Scarborough. Nick Chubb at 30-1. Until I see it from Nick Chubb again, I don't know if he's going to ever be at that level that he was once at. And we talked about that already. But I'm with you. I think I like Petway at 30-1. I like that more than I do Stidham.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to see down this list at 100-1 Deshaun Hand. I mean, if Jonathan Allen couldn't get in discussion for the Heisman, I don't see there's any possible way that Hand is there. I think they're just kind of throwing on an Alabama defender just to be cute there. Nick Fitzgerald at 100-1. You know, that's kind of a bet worth taking, I think. I mean, Mississippi State would have to win 9 or 10 games, I think, for him to realistically be in that conversation, which I don't think is going to happen, but he's the type of player that maybe has like a Cam Newton-esque season that lifts his team up there. So that's an attractive one. And I do think Darius Geis is probably the most outstanding player in the SEC. We've been pretty vocal about LSU probably having a down year. But if he just explodes, I could see him kind of having a Lamar Jackson-type year where, you know, maybe he blows up early on. They lose to Alabama, they lose to another team, but he's just so outstanding that he gets it. I could see that one as well.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of these cats down the list here, and the guys that you mentioned, you know, Christian Kirk, a lot of people think he could end up going number one overall in the draft, or he's at least going to be a first rounder, I think, when NFL draft time comes around. And then Nick Fitzgerald, I mean, looking over this list, comparing him to Stidham and Jalen Hurts, I think Nick Fitzgerald is the best all-around quarterback on this list, but as you alluded to, you know, he plays for Mississippi State, and so that's just not quite going to cut it. I mean, that's not quite as good as playing for Alabama. Although, you know, we've seen that shift a little bit, I think, in recent years. I think back to Robert Griffin III when he won it from Baylor. Lamar Jackson last year won it from Louisville. Those are two very good programs, probably better than Mississippi State, but they're not blue college football blue bloods by any means either. So, you know, I could see, I like that bet, honestly. If Fitzgerald at 100-1, I mean, wouldn't that be something? You know, you put down, what, 10 bucks, you win a grand on that one.
Yeah, see, when you're looking at odds like that, those are the bets that I like to take, kind of the long shots. I think they're just way better payoffs for what you're willing to do. Whereas as opposed to Jared Stidham, I think any money at 15-1, you're just wasting your dollars there.
I'm with you on that. So how about the SEC title odds? Alabama at 4-9 to win the SEC title, and then the next best thing you can get is LSU or Auburn at 6-1. Now, I know you like Auburn at 6-1 there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. You know, there's not a ton of value there, but, you know, compared to Alabama, I like those odds. One thing that really struck me when these odds came out, Tennessee, it wasn't that long ago, they were 20-1, and now they've fallen to 40-1 back with Texas A&M. Between Tennessee at 40-1, the next closest team is Florida at 12-1. So these odds suggest, you know, there's five contenders for the SEC, and then everyone else is basically a pretender at this point.
Yeah, and you talk about value. Maybe that Tennessee at 40-1 could be the best value here, because personally, I think you're going to get your best value out of an East team, because, you know, if Alabama slips up, that's basically what you've got to bet on. But even if you're not betting on that, the East teams generally are going to have a little bit of an easier road to Atlanta, and then you're looking at a one-game situation with Alabama. So, you know, imagine if Tennessee wins the East. They're not the Vols are not the favorite by any means, but I don't think people would be totally shocked if Tennessee came out as the champion in the East. So you take them at 40-1, one game situation. I don't think that they would beat Alabama, but that might be worth it for the money you're looking at.
Yeah, and I think if you want to look at it this way, you know, the best, kind of a Hail Mary, if you will, Kentucky at 200-1. I've been kind of down on Kentucky. I don't obviously think they're going to win the SEC, but, you know, they had a massive turnaround last season. I think Mark Stoops was on the doorstep of getting fired, and that was after an 0-2 start, but they ripped off 5 wins in 6 weeks after that, and they finished strong with a win at Louisville. You know, if they're able to take that momentum into this season and continue to just be able to really run the ball really well, kind of see some improvement from the defense, I could see that team sneaking into the title game. And, I mean, obviously they would be a huge underdog in that SEC title game. But, I mean, at 200-1, that might be worth a little bit of action right there.
Well, South Carolina coming in with the same odds at 200-1. And so I know a lot of people are pretty high on the Gamecocks as well. To me, I'm kind of viewing them like Kentucky right now. You know, you got to show me something real first. Mm-hmm. You got to, and then, I mean, South Carolina, you know, I don't really know what South Carolina did last year to deserve all of this hype. They beat Tennessee, and then they got worked by South Florida in the bowl game. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But clearly Vegas likes Alabama, a heavy favorite, and then LSU and Auburn both coming in at 6-1. Georgia, the fourth best team there at 8-1. Florida at 12-1. I like that, Mike. If I put down any money whatsoever on this, I might put it on Florida.
Yeah, and I think that would be a solid choice because I've been saying this all offseason. I think they're going to win the East and set up a game against Auburn is who I'm picking out of the West. But, you know, they have the talent in place to make some noise. They've got an ideal schedule. I think they're a lot better selection than Georgia, and they have better odds if you want to look at it that way. You know, I don't think you can go wrong betting Florida here.
So how about some of these over-under win totals? Alabama at 11 now. Now, see, that was at 10.5. Mm-hmm. And if you could have gotten it at 10.5, I think that would have been really the steal of the betting season, I guess, if you want to put it that way, because we talked about it the other day. Only 2 times under Nick Saban has Alabama won fewer than 11 games in the regular season. It was his first year in 2007 and that 2010 season where Cam Newton and Auburn came back, or they would have done it again that year. But Cam Newton and Auburn came back and won that game late. Those are the only 2 times Alabama has not won 11 in the regular season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people had that same idea. Obviously, that's the number's been driven up. And essentially, the only way you win it now with an over is if Alabama doesn't lose a game. So that's a tough bet to take. I mean, obviously, they're unlikely to lose 2 games, but if they lose 1, you're going to lose your money on the over.
Yeah, I think that would be probably one I would stay away from. I think they'll go undefeated, but, you know, there's a good chance a couple of teams like Florida State or Auburn that will probably give them a run for their money. So we've got LSU over under at 9. I would go under on that, but it's 9 is about right there. You know, 9's kind of a tricky number. I don't know that I'd really want to touch it.
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on the health of Danny Etling, and obviously Darius Geis have kind of talked him up here this episode. But, you know, if something were to happen to those 2 guys, I think it would definitely go far under. But 8 or 9 sounds about right there.
Over-under win totals for Auburn, Georgia, and Florida, all at 8.5. Georgia, I don't think I would touch it, but 8.5 for Florida and 8.5 for Auburn seems a little low to me. I think I might take a bet on one of those teams to go over 8.5.
Yeah. I mean, here, I think what you're seeing is these are legitimate SEC title contenders, but you know, there's just so many questions with Florida and Georgia, at least, and Auburn. I think there's still you know, there's just something about college football where we just can't let go of the past, you know, and there's just a lot of hype around this being 2015, despite basically the entire coaching staff and all the notable players have turned over at that school. But it's still, I guess, because it's Gus Malzahn and a new quarterback, a lot of people thinking this team could flame out. So I guess that's why that number is at 8.5. But it's hard for me to see Auburn not winning at least 9 games here.
Arkansas is at 6.5. Texas A&M is at 7. You know, Texas A&M, you're looking at 3 straight seasons at 8-5. So I'd probably take Kevin Sumlin's team to get to 8 wins again. I mean, he seems to know how to get them to that many. So, but
Early on in the season for Texas A&M, that bet will either pay off or you'll lose it immediately, because I think the UCLA game and even more importantly the Arkansas game in week 4, I think you know, those two games are going to determine whether they go over or under there.
And Texas A&M has not lost that Arkansas game since it joined the SEC either, so 5-for-5 so far, and I think Kevin Sumlin needs it more than ever this year. But the same could probably be said for Brett Bielema. So Tennessee coming in at 7.5 over-under win totals. I like the over on Tennessee. And, you know, I've been accused of just being too optimistic about Tennessee. But, Mike, you know, honestly, I read an article at one point that said, I can't remember, it was a national writer who said it. He said that Tennessee, that basically it would be a miracle if Tennessee got to 8 wins. And I look at Tennessee's schedule and if they win the games that they're favored in, which I think is why a lot of people think maybe they won't, but I mean, all you've got to do, you can lose to Florida, Georgia, LSU, and Alabama. And that you're still at 8 wins if you just beat Georgia Tech and South Carolina there. And so I don't think they'll lose all 4 in that stretch. I think they'll get a win against either Georgia or LSU. And so it's hard for me to see Tennessee below 8 this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, their perception is hurt a bit because, you know, I just don't know if Butch Jones is capable of overstepping expectations. Yeah, that's kind of been a common theme where I think he's had steady progress and he basically gets the wins he's supposed to and he loses the games that he's supposed to lose. So there's not been a point where he kind of, I mean, he'll sneak up on a team here or there. I remember early on in his tenure, beat South Carolina, the Georgia game a couple years ago that they came back in. I think, I want to say they mm-hmm. entered that game as an underdog. I'm not positive, but, you know, just rarely does Tennessee teams overstep what they're expected to do. And I think a reason why that could happen this year is because a lot of, you know, faith is being put in LSU and that coming at the tail end of the schedule. I think people are assuming this is, you know, LSU that's going to be contending for the SEC, whereas I think they're going to be more of a 7-8 win team at that time. I don't think it's going to be quite as tough a game. So I think Tennessee could be a sizable favorite in that game come November. So I'm kind of like you. I'm leaning 8 to 9 wins, but it is kind of troubling from all the fall camp reports I've heard that it sounds like the offensive line has had a lot of issues just basically staying healthy. So I think that's kind of the key to their season, the offense and the defensive line. And if they start out with a bunch of errors against Georgia Tech, it could be a long, long season for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find out a lot about how tough and how physical Tennessee is right up front, because that's a game against Georgia Tech where you're going to have to be on your game or you will get beat. So that's a tough one. You know, Mike, I think before we move on to the week 1 spreads, though, I just want to mention we're not doing any predictions on this episode. We will hold off until next week on the predictions, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's quite a few games here that I find attractive that I think it'd be wise to get on this action before the lines shift. But I think we'll hold off our predictions for the actual game winners till next week.
Well, then let's just talk about some of these lines and talk about the Vegas lines and what looks good to you and what looks good to me, because I see a couple also that I want to jump all over. Let's start with Georgia Southern at Auburn. Auburn is a 35-point favorite. I don't have much of an opinion on that one. I think Auburn probably will cover it.
Well, I would lean the other way. You know, later in the season, when these teams are both kind of, you know, firing on all cylinders, sure, I would bet that much on Auburn. But especially early in the season, I always tend to grab points when they're like that. You know, there's always a game where, you know, Alabama's playing, you know, Charlotte or something, and it's like a 60-point spread. I'll take that 60 yeah. because that, I mean, it's just so hard to cover stuff like that. And you know, obviously, this line is only about half that at 35, but I just don't think that Auburn's just going to come out and steamroll a team week one. I think both these teams are built on the running game, so they're going to chew the clock. It's not going to be extremely high scoring. It might be like 48-14 or something like that. I think that's kind of what they're thinking. But I think if Georgia Southern can get some running game going, I don't think they're going to threaten Auburn by any means. But, you know, a three-touchdown game, I could easily see this go, I don't know, 28-7 or something like that, 38-14, I don't, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that too, especially with it being early on. You know, Georgia Southern has a history also, another thing worth mentioning. I mean, they are not going to lie down. I mean, because they played Ole Miss last year. Mm-hmm. I believe they led that game at halftime. And then, of course, we remember the Florida game. Well, the year before that, they took Georgia to overtime, and then it was, I guess, 3 years ago where they beat Florida in the Swamp. So Georgia Southern's not going to come in scared. So.
And one other interesting stat about Georgia Southern I didn't realize until recently, but since Nick Saban has taken over at Alabama, the team that has gained the most rushing yards on a Nick Saban defense is Georgia Southern. They had, mm-hmm. I think it was something like 400 rushing yards on them. So it doesn't matter the opponent. You know, they know how to run the ball.
South Carolina and NC State, Wolfpack favored by 6. Anything interesting about that line to you?
Well, I think when this first came out, I think it was a much smaller line. I think the bets on NC State have driven it up. I don't know a ton about NC State, but from people that do cover that team that I've talked to, you know, they have a incredible defensive line. And I think that's mm-hmm. going to be a matchup nightmare for South Carolina. So I really tend to lean towards NC State. But what I'm worried with here is the possibility of a backdoor cover. You know, Jake Bentley, he really is a really good quarterback. He's got some good targets to throw to. So in a game, an opening game like this with a large spread, you always got to be worried about a team, an explosive team that can score a touchdown late that may be meaningless, you know, towards the final score, but it'll kill you on the spread.
Florida and Michigan, that number is at 4 now in favor of Michigan. It hasn't shifted much with the announcement that Florida had 7 players suspended. I believe it only went from 3.5 to 4, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was a steady line at around 3, 3.5, wherever you look, and now it is up to 4. So it's moved just slightly. But in this game, I would tend to lean towards Florida because, in my mind, this is a toss-up game. And if you're going to give me more than a field goal in a game that I consider to be a toss-up, I'll take that just about every time.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Kentucky minus 10.5 at Southern Miss. This is one that I really like because Southern Miss beat Kentucky by 9 points last year in Lexington, and now they're going to get Kentucky at home. Now, they are also replacing Nick Mullins. So the fact that they don't have their quarterback who was, I mean, he was fantastic. And he just, I mean, I knew going into that game he was going to throw all over Kentucky. I don't think they are going to be able to do that this time around. But still yet, early season on the road for Kentucky, 10.5 seems a little much to me.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about Southern Miss. I was going to mention the quarterback, so I'm glad you say he's gone so I don't sound like an idiot. But 10.5 on the road, that's a number that I would stay away from week one. I think Kentucky should win this game, but by 10.5, that's a tall task, I think, starting off the year.
App State at Georgia, minus 13.5. Appalachian State, of course, we remember the Tennessee game last year. Really similar situation here, if you ask me, because I think Georgia's coming into this season, for the most part, from what I've heard and what I've read and just seen from their fans, there is a lot of optimism in Athens, and I think a lot of expectations. I think they're very high, and I kind of worry about Georgia against an App State team who can run the ball in week one.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I know Appalachian State fairly well. I studied them up last year. They've got a lot of talent coming back. I've got a lot of faith in that coach, Scott Satterfield. I think, not saying that they're going to sneak up and beat Georgia, but I think a win like that is kind of what is going to take for him to get a big-time job, maybe like an Ole Miss job in the offseason. So I believe they won their league last year. I think this is going to be a challenge, and I tend to lean towards Appalachian State with the 13.5 points.
I think I would, too. I don't know that I would bet on it, but I tell you one I would bet on is this next one. I think it's the steal of the week, without a doubt. And I have a feeling you're going to disagree with me on this, but you might not. Ole Miss minus 24, South Alabama coming into Oxford week one. I think South Alabama covers that.
Yeah, I figured you'd say that. But
I think they might win the game.
That 24, so, kind of similar like the Auburn Georgia Southern with the 35 point spread. 24 is a lot in the opening game. I wouldn't bet on this game, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Ole Miss covered that, because I just think that offense is going to be so explosive. I think it's going to be tough for South Alabama to match up with that. I think that's kind of how they took advantage of Mississippi State last year. Nick Fitzgerald got pulled from that game. He was just totally ineffective. They were kind of rotating quarterbacks in and out of that game, and they just kind of snuck by Mississippi State. If I don't recall, it was 21-20 was that game, and I don't think they can hold an Ole Miss offense to anything of that caliber. So I think it'll be close to this 3-4 touchdown game, as the line suggests.
I'm not saying South Alabama's going to win. I mean, I did write an article saying that they would, but I just really think they'll cover 24, because I think Ole Miss is going to have it's going to be a terrible season. But anyway, moving on for the sake of time here. Florida State and Alabama, that game in Atlanta, Alabama minus 7. I like Alabama to cover the spread. You give Nick Saban time to prepare. And which I know that's such a cliche. I mean, we've heard it 1,000 times, but I keep thinking back to last year, and I know it's two totally different teams, and I understand that, different styles, different defenses, all that. But I think about how good USC ended up being and winning the Rose Bowl, and in week one they lose by 46 points. 52-6 to Alabama. I think Alabama just does that to you. You know, they kind of take your soul away, and I think they'll do it to Florida State.
Yeah, and the matchup to watch here, in my opinion, you know, I've reached out to some Florida State people. They say the offensive line is kind of suspect, and I think that's the very last position that you want to be suspect going up against Alabama. That could be a nightmare matchup for Florida State. I don't anticipate a blowout, but I do tend to think that Alabama's, you know, they come out ready from game one, ready to play. They're going to be midseason form. Florida State, Jimbo Fisher has a reputation as being, you know, a halftime mastermind. So it wouldn't surprise me if Alabama jumps up to a big lead and Florida State makes a comeback. But in the end, I like Alabama by at least 10 points in this game.
Any thoughts on Vandy at MTSU? I mean, typically when they play that game in Murfreesboro, it's pretty close.
Yeah, I actually like Middle Tennessee in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if they win it outright. So if you're going to give me 5.5 points, I think I'll take that against a Vanderbilt team who I think they took advantage of some teams late in last year that were kind of falling apart and you know, not only due to injuries, but in the locker room. And I think that's kind of hyped up their program as a one that's trending in the right direction. But I think that was a bit of a mirage.
BYU and LSU, I'm going to be honest with you. This one to me is a total head scratcher. I don't know what to think here. It's the line is LSU minus 12, and I guess I would tend to say LSU would cover that. But you know, this for a season opener, this is kind of not that BYU is anything to. I mean, you can't overlook that program by any means. I was writing a story earlier, and I happened to notice. And BYU's four losses last year, I don't know if you know this, but their four losses came by a combined 8 points. So they lost two games by 1 point and two games by 3 points. So, I mean, they were that close to an undefeated season. So I think it'll be a decent game. I like LSU to win the game, but I'm not sure on the spread.
Yeah, and they have a really good quarterback in Tanner Magnum, I believe is his name. You know, given a guy like that 12 points, I tend to lean towards BYU here. And you know, adding to the BYU Nuggets here, I didn't realize they're playing this weekend. So they'll have a full game under their belt before playing this LSU squad. I think that's an advantage there. So with Arden Key, he's not officially out for LSU, but he's not even practicing yet. So it's hard for me to believe that he's going to play in this game. I think that's enough to BYU to potentially threaten LSU here and potentially even win this game.
Texas A&M at UCLA minus 3.5. You know, Josh Rosen, the matchup here is going to be Josh Rosen against Texas A&M's defensive front. And again, I don't want to get too in-depth with the actual, you know, because we're not actually doing our predictions yet, but so I don't really know what to say as far as on the spread on the game line, because I think I do like UCLA to win, and so, but with it being a half point, you got to think Vegas is thinking it's going to be a close game, and so if anything, I might go UCLA with the extra half point by more than a field goal.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really, really interesting game. I'm happy that it's on a Sunday, so I think this will be the only SEC game going on that day. You know, I think we don't give Kevin Sumlin and his team enough credit for getting these young quarterbacks ready to play. And it looks like they're going to have another young quarterback making his first start on the road. And, you know, I understand why people would discount that. You know, for more programs than not, that is going to be an issue. But I think he's proven that's not a problem in his system with his program. So, you know, this is going to be a really good game, I think. And given the 3.5 points, I would lean towards Texas A&M. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they win this game outright. If this was 3 or 2.5, I'd probably go with UCLA. But I think it's going to be that close to where if you're going to give me more than a field goal edge, I'll take Texas A&M here.
Last one we've got here, Tennessee and Georgia Tech in Atlanta. Tennessee favored by 4. To be honest with you, I don't think I would touch that one. I think that's the more I think about it, that game is going to be a toss-up. It's going to come down. It's going to depend on how good Tennessee's defense is in the trenches, I think, how good their linebackers are and how good their front seven is. But you give me a spread of 4, Tennessee favorite, I can't touch that one.
Yeah, I think a spread like this on a neutral site, even though it's in Atlanta, it still is a neutral site technically. I think a spread like this kind of indicates nobody knows who's going to win this game. And this is just a dangerous, dangerous game for both teams. It's kind of a matchup nightmare for Tennessee, but I think for Georgia Tech as well. I went through their last 4 recruiting classes, they only have 1 4-star recruit on the roster. So, you know, they're at a serious talent disadvantage, but they have been many times in the past and they've come through. So this is just a stay away for me for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. Mike, anything else before we get out of here? We went about 40 minutes here on episode 3. So good stuff today.
Yeah, I hope everyone is enjoying the, you know, the podcast and everything, and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, same here. This should be out. Again, you can listen to it, I guess, whenever you want, however you want. But this has been episode 3, so episode 4 will be it will be up and posted as well shortly. So thanks again to everyone who listened to this podcast, and we'll see you next time.